So just to kind of bring things together. So to recap, because it's been a little while. So we need to figure out what exactly a shtar is. And in order to figure out how a shtar works, and then also to understand the relationship of kiyum shtaros to the concept of a shtar, we have to essentially consider it from a negative perspective. Because we know that there's something a shtar has to avoid, and through that, we can figure out, or at least get some sense of the boundaries of what a shtar is. Right? We know, what does a shtar have to avoid? The soul of mipihem lo mipisav. That if we know that Eidus has this limitation, that it has to be oral, it has to be alpi, and the Gemara paraphrases that to say mipi. So how is it that a shtar can exist? And we saw already a bunch of answers in Rishonim. I just want to kind of categorize them for you so you can see exactly how the parts come together. Right? So to work kind of backwards to get this view put in its right category. So Rambam, which is in a sense least helpful for us maybe, is that there is no real distinction maybe. That on a Torah level, this is a problem. That a shtar does suffer from a deficiency of the pihem b'mitzvah, and the only reason it works is it's an institution of midrabah. And that institution is there in order shalotin odelos b'fnei lovin, again a major shmita year consideration, that we don't want people to hesitate to lend money, and the poor are going to suffer, they won't be able to get help, because they're not going to have this avenue of recovery. So we want shtaros to exist to give some extra security to people who lend money. So according to the Rambam's view, we don't really have a distinction between shtar and the psul of mipi and the mipi psul. In the middle, you have a group of rishonim. We won't list them again now. I just want to put them in that kind of a category that say that essentially this does not violate that problem. That the eidus that a shtar brings forward is not a problem of mipi and mipi lo mipi psalva, because that only applies to other situations. What kind of other situations do you see in Rishonim? Maybe it only applies to someone who can't speak, right, to an Elaine. That was one possibility. Maybe it only applies to Eidus that is sent to Beis Din, as opposed to Eidim who are actually there with their written testimony. Or like we discussed, maybe it only applies when the Eidim don't actually remember their testimony. So they have things written down, and they're saying, well, it's what's written down here, so this is my testimony. But even after being reminded, they have no actual memory of it. So maybe that's what the soul of Mipihem lo mipisav means. But maybe all of that is different than shtar. It doesn't affect shtar. So that's a middle way to see it. You're grouping together a couple of different suggestions and we're showing them all into one basket. And the third category way to look at it is the idea that we associated with the Baal HaMor and also Tosfos here and Daf Vav, that shtar is different. But there's a fundamental difference between a shtar and eidus. And eidus is subject to the psul of mipi and v'lo mipi psava, and shtar is something else. So, for example, if you see this Tosfos, the long Tosfos that goes from Chaf Amud Aleph to Chaf Amud Beis, so Tosfos has a couple of differences between eidus and the shtar. They're just different avenues with all kinds of differences. But the one that we focused on specifically, which is the one that Baal HaMor and others also emphasized, is that a shtar comes midas hamischayev, that the person who is incurring a responsibility, he is the author of the shtar, whether we mean authoring in the sense of writing it or authoring in the sense of authorizing it, but it represents his view rather than the view of the agent. And therefore you find differences also, such as some of the Rishonim focusing on who is the one who is disseminating the shtar? Is it coming from Eidim, or is it coming from the litigant?
Maybe that's a key difference.
But again, the issue being that shtar is one thing, Eidus is another thing. Okay, so you follow so far how we categorize those? Right, either the Rambam type of view that really the psul does apply to shtar and it's only the drabanan that it works, or all of those rishonim who say that the psul is kind of narrow and doesn't get in the way of a shtar working, or the view that we're just mentioning here that there's a difference between shtar and eidus, and eidus has this psul, but shtar is a new creation. Shtar has its own set of rules and its own standards. Okay, so far so good. So if we do take this last position, that a shtar is something magical, where a shtar has its own abilities. So what is a shtar? What can a shtar do that is magical? How is a shtar different from Eidus, besides not having this psul? But what else does a shtar accomplish that's different than Eidus? What have we mentioned at least something so far? How do we find the shtar accomplishing things in a different way than Eidus? Ready?
That you don't have to be or the person who wrote on the shtar, the aid that wrote on the kosher shtar doesn't have to be a kosher aid when the shtar is used.
Right, so that's one major one, right? That the Eidus that it represents, to whatever extent it's like Eidus, it's not happening now, it happened then. It represents essentially a Maisa Bezdin that took place when the shtar was created. So if the Eidim are possible now, but were kosher at the time of the shtar, so then they're kosher, the shtar is kosher. And that wouldn't work with other types of testimony. And if somebody witnessed something in a state of kashrus, but now he wants to come testify about it in a state of psul, we wouldn't accept it. But a shtar from that same guy, we would accept. And vice versa, right? Our mission is talking about the opposite. Our mission is talking to say katanim ha'inim, anusim ha'inim. So it sounds like you're talking about a situation where now you're kosher, but at the time of the shtar you weren't. So the shtar is treated essentially like it is a living artifact of a Bezdin session from a previous time, and works off the standards of that time. So that's one major difference. And this, by the way, is emphasized, I think we mentioned this, that Rav Shechter Shlit in Eretz HaTzvi has a whole essay of Kuntras HaShtaros, and at the beginning of the Kuntras HaShtaros he talks about this difference and a few others. Another difference that he talks about there is that the shtar, in addition to whatever else it says, whatever other factors it relates, it also essentially serves as its own proof of itself. And what does that mean? That basically the shtar is reflective of its own inherent kashrus. That the shtar existing creates a premise that the shtar is valid. So it's an extra level of credibility that's given to the shtar. So, hi?
Don't we require a kiyum shtar?
Oh, yes, but what else about that? What do we know about the kiyum? It's only drabanan, right? And therefore, the statement in the Gemara in the beginning of Masech is Gittin, that Eidim achsumim al ashtar, k'misha nechkara yusim bebezin adami, that the Eidim are considered to be as if they have been examined by Bezdin, that's the actual reality of the shtar. And Chazal are the ones who imposed kiyum shtaros. Now, we'll have to talk about, we'll see if we get to it today, maybe we will, as to what exactly did they do to the shtar by putting kiyum shtaros on it. But, on its own, the shtar reflects its own kashrus. And that's the essential tension in our Mishnah. Because in our Mishnah, so you have Eidim who are fighting against the shtar. And so they are basically maintaining that the shtar is not kosher, and the shtar seems to have a certain weight of its own by existing and maintaining that it is kosher. So that's another factor of the shtar. The shtar sends a message,
And there's another layer that it provides its own statement that the message itself is valid, and that the shtar itself is valid. There is another element, or Shechter, I don't see that he necessarily talked about this, but Bochanan talks about this, that there is a question here, Tosfos, put it on the Mar Makomos, I believe Tosfos on Daf Yutes, which asks about Nigo. Tosfos of Olam. Is that it? The other one. One of you short Tosfos and asked about Nigo. And some of the Rishonim explain, Tosfos doesn't spell this out, the other Rishonim say it more clearly, that Nigo should not work against a Shtar Mekuyim, against a Shtar that's been fully validated, so Nigo is not going to work. So Bochanan Wasserman has a little piece about this in his Kovet Shiurim to Bava Basra Daf Lamed Hei. It's actually Os Lamed Hei rather than Bava Basra, where he explains, based on the Shidu Mekubetzis over there, that the reason Nigo doesn't work is, to use a term we saw a few weeks ago, it's a problem of Nigo Lahotzi. So what does that mean, to call it Nigo Lahotzi? What are we saying about a shtar? Now we're saying that if I have a shtar that says, you owe me money, and you have some Nigo against me, so the Migo doesn't work because it's called Nigo Lahotzi. According to those who have shown him, the Nigo Lahotzi doesn't work. Right? So that's quite a statement. What does that statement mean?
Shtar made you the Mukhsa.
Oh, Shtar made me the Mukhsa. So in other words, holding the Shtar that says you owe me money, it's Kiilu, I'm holding the money itself. So that status that Mamun HaOmed Likbos Kegavoi Dami, that this money that you are in a position to collect, so the halacha considers it already collected. So that's also apparently an element of the shtar, that the shtar is powerful enough to create within you a status of mukhsa. So that would also seem to be something different than eidim. Pashtus having eidim on your side doesn't make you into mukhsa. But having the shtar on your side, that seems to have a greater power that transcends what Aiden could accomplish by himself. Then to go back to the Shechter's essay, so as he notes, there is another major element of what a shtar is, that in addition to sending a message, that the contents of the shtar, and in addition to its own inherent believability that it's a valid shtar, but the shtar also is able to convey messages beyond what is written on the shtar. So, for example, as the Gemara in Bava Basra brings out, let's say I come to you and I say, you owe me money. Here's the shtar. And you say, but I paid you back the money. And you say, paraiti. So what can I say to you? Right, you saw the Gemara Bava Basra? Shtarcha biyadi, my boy. Right, that normally if you pay me back, I should give you back the shtar. So if I have the shtar, so essentially I'm able to claim to you that that's itself proof that you didn't pay me back. Now ask Rabbi Baker and others, why is that proof? What kind of proof is that? And so, what's the mechanism of that proof? Right, it's possible that you paid me back, but I didn't give you the shtar back.
You would have asked for that.
Right?
You would have. Right?
You, would have. You probably would have. But is that impossible that it went the other way? Is it impossible that you paid me back, I gave you the shtar, and they dropped it? Oh, so it's a chazaka. What kind of a chazaka is not? Chazaka, I mean, chazaka might be the right word, or to say a little bit more specifically.
Yeah, the right then and there, he had an obligation to pay the guy, mm-hmm. But otherwise, he still has the obligation.
But well, the chazaka part was on the right track. I'm looking for a little bit. It's a rogue, right? Rogue is a form of chazaka, so you're not wrong. I just want to be a little more specific. Right? It seems like it's a rogue. Right? It seems like, essentially, most people who pay their debts get their shtaros back. They wouldn't pay their debt and allow their debtor to hold on to the shtar. So the existence of the shtar in the creditor's hand is essentially a rove. So he could use a rove to collect money for me? What problem should that run up against? What problem should that go against? What klal does that seem to contradict?
You can't go after a rove.
Ain't holchum mamanach a rove, right? You can't collect money based on a rove.
Can you say though it's also like in Zedaka? Up until now, he hasn't paid the guy back yet. So it's a record that he hasn't paid the guy yet back yet. And until proven otherwise, we're gonna believe it's the circumstance before, the previous circumstance, which is when he didn't pay the guy yet.
Right. So it's true. You might be able to throw that factor in, right? That we know that there was a debt. We know money was borrowed. We don't know that it was paid back. So therefore, 50-50, let's give the edge to the possibility it wasn't paid back. So that's a valid way of thinking in general. It's not clear that that's what's at play here. You're right that it goes back to our previous sugya. This parak is really very, very gishmak parak. It should be three blocks since the beginning of the parak. How many major yesodos of Nashim Nezikim right here, right? So we saw Migo and Rove already. It's amazing how many things are here, right? So we saw already Migo and Rove. So we saw that when we talk about in Holchem Mamanach HaRove, the idea that you can't collect money through a Rove, so we saw that there's room to argue, is that absolute, and adding on other elements to the other side is not going to make a difference? Or should we say, no, it's not so absolute, it's that usually that's how the math works out, but if there are other factors, maybe it could accumulate. So you're essentially saying, here, if I want to collect the shtar, I say you owe me money, you say nothing doing, you're keeping your money, so you seem to be a mopsak on your money, but what am I? So one thing we saw here is, okay, I have a rove of shtarcha biyadi my boy, that chances are most people would not allow a shtar to remain in my hands if it was really paid back. That's one possibility. You're adding on another possibility that maybe we could say also that there's a chazaka meikar, that we know that yesterday you owed me money. And we know that we don't have any evidence that you paid me back. So maybe there's a chazaka meikar, which by itself should not be enough against the emotzi money in a mochzak. But maybe that also could get thrown into the mix. We could also bring in what we just said a second ago from Rav Chanan, that maybe my shtar makes me a mochzak on your money. Now, if that's true, it would make us both mochzakim, because you have the actual physical possession of money, and I have a halacha of mochzak, so we'd have to figure out what to do with it. But maybe you could say that these three things together could tilt the balance a little bit. Or you could say, essentially, as Shechter notes over there, that this is a reflection of the magic of shtar. That when you wish upon a shtar, you can do things that you can't do with other things, and that normal rules, a rove is not going to do it, but that's the whole nature of a shtar, that a shtar is considered to prove something, is considered to contain its own inherent validity, and also has elements that are proven by it even beyond its content. So in other words, the shtar only said that you borrowed the money. It doesn't say anything about you not having paid it back. But the existence of the shtar in my hands, that also is considered to be a part of what the shtar proves, and that's also this special element of what a shtar does. Now, it's interesting, if you had a chance to see the Rambam Hilchos Tome V'Nitin, that this is also a point that the Shechter discusses over there, that let's say I have a shtar that says you owe me money, and the shtar has 8 efa. Right? The shtar does not have the requisite 2 efa that we normally talk about. It only has 1 efa. So the Rambam says, if you saw this Rambam, but the Rambam says that that could also work for me. Because I could come, say, to Tzal and say, here's a shtar, you owe me money. And you'll say, paraiti. You'll say that you paid me back. So I'll say, nope, but I got the shtar, it's got 1 8. that should be enough to make you take a shvur. Now, you can't take a shvur because, as the Rambam explains over there, that you can't really contradict what I've said. All I'm saying is that you come and you owe me money. You borrowed money from me. And you don't deny that. You just claim that you paid it back. So, therefore, since you're not able to really deny the basic claim that I'm making, so you're not able to take a shvur, and you'll end up having to pay me. So this one age shtar can be effective practically in getting you to pay me. So the Kesef Mishnah and others ask on the Rambam, that's really surprising. And because normally, let's say two Edim came and say that I borrowed money from you. But I come and I say, yeah, you're two Edim are right. But I paid it back. And they don't know that. So I could be believed with a claim of paraiti. So now you're telling me that a shtar with one aid is more powerful than two aidim? Right, two aidim can't make me pay, and a shtar with one aid can make me pay? So how could you explain that? You could say the different things, exactly. You could say that, yeah, if shtar was just a form of written eidos, right, or just some way in which eidos becomes acceptable even when it's fixav. So yeah, so it's strange to believe that shtar with one eid can accomplish something that two physical eidim cannot do. But if we say that shtar has its own set of rules, and that it's able to accomplish things on a different track than Aegis, and that part of that is that it testifies to its own inherent validity and to things beyond, within the picture, not just to the original loan, but also to the continuing existence of the loan. So that's a pretty powerful thing, but that might be how it works. So what do you see from that position of the Rambam? So if you see this Tosfos on Daf Chav, again, very important Tosfos, the long Tosfos. So Tosfos actually, as I alluded to before, I said we'll come back to, so Tosfos notes that there are a couple of distinctions between a shtar and eidos. This whole idea that we'll define a shtar in a different way. So there are a couple of attributes that set aside a shtar from eidos. One is the fact that the shtar comes to midas hamishayev. We mentioned that before is the key attribute. Another is the language. The language of a shtar is different than the language of eidos, which is more about remembering things that happened zecher and dvarim, while a shtar has its own nosach. And another difference that Tosfos suggests, Tosfos has two deis about this, is that a shtar inherently has to have two eidos. While when it comes to other forms of eidos, so normally we need two eidim, but we know that there are things that can be accomplished by one eid. And we have different types of oral testimony that accomplish different things. So normally you require two eidim, but there is also an effectiveness sometimes to one eid. And there's also a concept of hodas bal din, that the litigant can acknowledge something. So when it comes to that, so Tosfos is considering the possibility that that's all about eidos, but shtar is something different. So Tosfos basically has two deis, whether a shtar that only has one eid cannot be called a shtar. Maybe it can be called something else, but maybe it's not a shtar. There's also a machlokas rishonim which relates, and we'll see in a second, what if somebody writes something out in his own handwriting, but without eidim? Now let's say somebody writes out an IOU. And so somebody writes a hischaivus, b'ksav yado, but not with eidim. Does that count as a shtar? Right, that would parallel the eidus of hodas bal din. So the machlokas, the two deis in Tosfos as to whether you could have a shtar with one eid or not,
essentially, is that called a shtar? Or would that be called something else? So it seems like the Rambam is taking a stand on this. And so how would the Rambam come out? What is a shtar with one ayin? Is it a shtar? Yes, right? Because we see that the shtar with one ayin is able to accomplish something that physical ayin can't do in getting this person to pay because he can't defend himself from the claim of parasitism. So it seems like there is this machlokus in general. We're trying to figure out the differences between shtar and edus. So how exactly do we address a question like this? Can you have a shtar that doesn't have two edim on it? So the way Rav Soloveitchik addressed this issue, which is again the background for the chapters of Kuntros on Sharos, is how do you understand what a shtar is? You understand the shtar to be essentially a form of edus, but that for whatever reason it's allowed to take place bitoch haksav, and that's something that flows from the distinctions we mentioned at the beginning today. And therefore, it's going to follow the standards of whatever works in oral testimony, but here it'll be written. So, one aid has a certain credibility, and one aid and a shtar will have a certain credibility. Hodas Baldin has a certain credibility, so a shtar Yisov Yado will also have a certain credibility. Or should we say a little bit differently that a shtar really is its own creation? It's not edus mitoch haksav, but rather it is a raya mitoch haksav, that it has its own sense of proof, and therefore maybe it has its own rules that don't lend itself to one aid like the other day in Tosus, and maybe doesn't work if it's Biksav Yado without aid. Now, if that's the case, we'll have to also figure out that when it comes to get, the get may work the same way, the get may work differently, and we'll talk about that a little bit. Then a get has its own makoros, and part of the question is parenthetically, is whether a get will be treated like a normal shtar, or whether it works based on its own sources. Okay, so far so good? Are we following?
What did we mean when we said raya? We mean basically that shtar is its own proof?
That maybe it works as a type of evidence in court, but it's not testimony. And therefore it doesn't simply follow the style of testimony transferred to paper, but it has its own existence, and its existence requires a two-way. Right, so you'll see essentially, now to figure out, probably comes out, I don't recall if Shefter makes this point, I didn't see that he did, that maybe now the Rambams that we've seen work together. Right, that according to the Rambam, right, essentially, a shtar should have been possible. A shtar should have been subject to the psul of Nitiyim will only be accepted. And the only reason it works is because Chazal added this extra mechanism so that we shouldn't discourage people from lending money. So then, probably works well, consistent with that, that the shtar is not fundamentally different from Eidus, but rather it's a form of allowing the Eidus to work in writing, and therefore Eid Echad could also be a shtar. And whatever an Eid Echad could accomplish, so a shtar could also accomplish it. While if you believe that a shtar really is its own, if you believe that a shtar really is its own creation, with a whole different set of rules, so then you would never have thought in the first place that the psul of Yipiyim v'lo Yipiksavim applies to it. Follow what I'm saying? I'll repeat that point. That essentially,
for the Rambam, who believes that the psul of Mipiyam Velo Mipiksavim really does apply to a shtar, and it's only Midrabbanan that it works, so then they're essentially forms of the same thing, and you can see why Yafa could also work for a shtar. But if you believe that they're fundamentally different animals, and you need two Aiden to create a shtar, and nothing less, so then, yeah, you would never have thought, really, that the psul of Mipiksavim would apply to the shtar, because it's a different thing. It's not talking about Aedus. It's its own kind of right.
Yes. If Mipiyam never applied to shtar, why does he think that it's not from the Torah? Why does he think
no, I'm saying the Rambam would not say. Saying, like, the idea that it sounds like if the Rambam says Eid Echad B'shtar counts for something, right, he's really using Aedus rules rather than shtar rules. And the fact that he uses Aedus rules makes sense because he thinks that subject also is an Aedus problem of Mipiyam Velo Mipiksavim. It does have that problem, just Midrabbanan, we allow it because of this concern of not to discourage lenders. But if you believe they're two completely separate things, not like the Rambam, and so then you can see why they're not bothered by the question, because Mipiyam Velo Mipiksavim is an Aedus problem, not a shtar problem. So with that essential introduction, essentially about our shtaros, so now let's spend a few minutes. We'll probably carry on for a few minutes tomorrow also, and then we'll try to segue into the Mason House of Russia, which we'll deal with next. So what does Kiyum Shtaros accomplish now? Right, if you say that the Chazal put in this institution of Kiyum Shtaros, so what is that meant to accomplish? And there are a lot of different ways to ask the question. Nachronim have some pretty extensive discussions about this. But to begin with, we can ask it like this. Right? So again, working off the basis that this is an institution, the Chazal, the Kiyum Shtaros. So what is the Kiyum Shtaros about? Right? Is the Kiyum Shtaros about the shtar? Or is it about the facts of the shtar? Are the Eidim coming to validate the existence of the shtar? And once they do that, then the shtar stands on its own? Or did Chazal say something else? Did Chazal say that this shtar is coming to send a certain message, and the shtar has credibility on the message, but Chazal added that there should be validation on the signatures to support that message? It seems like a little bit of a subtle distinction, but it makes a difference. Because, I mean, before getting so specific, that's also one of the central tensions in our mission. Right? Yeah, what's going on in our mission? What are the moving parts in our mission? Right? That essentially, eight of them are coming and saying, on the one hand, we are mekayim the shtar. Right? We say, yes, that handwriting is ours. On the other hand, we argue with the content of the shtar. Now, we say the shtar was phony, or that we were not good witnesses. And that our Mishnah also has two possibilities. Are the Eidim being the kind of shtar themselves, or are other people being the kind of shtar? Right? Those are the essential moving parts of our Mishnah. Right? So basically, you have a clash between these two Eidim and the original ones who signed on the shtar, and the shtar itself. So what kind of a fight is this? Is this a fight against the content of the shtar? Shtar says this, and we say that. Or is it about the shtar itself? This goes to the essence of the shtar, and the shtar's viability, its ability to do all of these magic tricks that a shtar can do when you wish upon it. And they're challenging that by going to the very Kiyum itself. By saying that the whole process of Kiyum Eidim is about establishing that the Eidim are valid, and we, the Eidim, say, yes, it was us, but we weren't valid. Nari?
It seems that they're just denying the testimony, so it doesn't seem to be in the content.
Not necessarily, because their testimony also involves their own signatures on it. Right, especially to the extent they say we were apostle, we were ketanim. And so it could be they're just saying, this shtar that you have is garnished.
and so we don't even have to talk about the content, because the shtar only works because it's a valid shtar, and the shtar itself, we don't acknowledge. The shtar itself, you only know because of our kiyum, and we're saying it's essentially enough. So, just to sketch out, and we'll flesh it out a little bit more tomorrow. So, there are many different understandings in Achronim, at least two or three. In the Tosfos that we saw a few weeks ago before we left off, right? The Tosfos that asks that why is it which also was it? Right, Tosfos Harayo and Emunah. Right, so Tosfos that asks, so why do we believe these Eidim? Right, Rashi had said there's essentially a Pesha Asa play here. Right, that here these Eidim are saying it was us, but it wasn't us. On the one hand, it was us, but on the other hand, we weren't qualified. So as Rashi says, that sounds like a Pesha Asa. We believe you because you're the one who told us in the first place, and you're the one who says this. So if we equate Pesha Asa with Migo, like we have in the past, or like some of the Rishonim did in the past, then all right, so it's a Migo against Eidim, right? We saw this Tosfos to ask this question. So why is that not true? So what is Tosfos' answer? Right, since Chachamim now came and imposed kiyum, hachal lo chashiv klal kiyum, masha omrim ksav yadenu hu zeh. So now the fact that they're saying this is our handwriting, that's not called kiyum. Why kevan the inu gufayhu amri toch kedei dibor ketanim o anisum hayinu? Because at the same time as they're saying this toch kedei dibor, they're also saying that we were ketanim or anisum. So what is Tosfos telling us there? Well, what's the impact of that Tosfos? I want to try to explain. Well, what's Tosfos telling us? So why is it not migo makom eidim? So?
Because it's a really good thing is that it's as if the Eidus on the shtar is what makes up the shtar. If you don't have the Eidus on the shtar, then the shtar isn't valid.
Okay.
And over here, the Eidim over here are saying like, they're saying that the shtar isn't, they're either contradicting themselves. Because they're contradicting themselves, it's as if they're saying that I wasn't kid when I wrote the shtar, or I wasn't the valid witness when I wrote the shtar, and therefore the shtar itself isn't valid.
So you're reading posts to say essentially they're undermining the shtar itself.
Right.
But basically, they're not addressing the content of the shtar. Right? They're saying that the shtar is no shtar. And because kiyum is required midrabanan, so the impact of that institution midrabanan is that it's essentially not a shtar at all. This sounds like, well, I'll get more specific about it probably tomorrow, there's a Reb Chaim in Hilchos Gerushin, which if you have time, you can take a look at. Draws on some of those Rambams I put on today's Mar Makomos, which I'll flesh out a little more tomorrow. And Chazan Ish has Gilyonos to Reb Chaim. If you ever looked at this in the past, Reb Chazan Ish and Reb Chaim didn't really have the exact same Derech HaLimud, so it's a very fascinating text that the later editions of Reb Chaim on the Rambam have the Chazan Ish's Gilyonos, so to compare the way Reb Chaim approached the sugi and the way the Chazan Ish approached the sugi, you have them directly there in the same volume, it's always fascinating. So essentially, Reb Chaim's approach sounds like, again, to oversimplify it right now, that because you need kiyum, and they're saying, we're not being the kind of shtar. The process of kiyum is to ascertain that the shtar is valid, and we're saying it wasn't. So you don't really need language like Migo and Pesha Asa. What you're basically saying is there is no kiyum to the shtar. And if there's no kiyum, so then there's no shtar. If there's no shtar, so then whatever these Eidim say, they should win the day. As opposed to the second scenario in Mishnah, where there's kiyum from others.
So now you have a shtar, and the Edom can't really fight against that. I will also have to figure out, are we saying that the Edom can't fight against the shtar? Or are we saying that essentially now it solidifies their own original Edus, and an Ed can't argue against himself, right? What's that principle called? An Ed can't argue against himself? Right? So it's either that is now Edom against the shtar in the second case, or it's Edom against themselves in the principle of Kevin Shigi Shubinachozer Magi. But essentially, that's in the second scenario. But the first scenario could be that if they're in the same breath saying, yeah, it was us, but we're no good, or we were no good then, so you don't have a shot, and then you don't have the whole issue. Now, another approach is to say differently. And is to say, no, you haven't really knocked out the shtar completely. But what you've done is you have called into question the validity of the facts of the shtar. That these two Edom have essentially established through what they're saying now, and that's the effect of Kiyum Shtaris, that Kiyum Shtaris has asked us to, even though the shtar works midoraisa, but now we have to have an extra endorsement to the content of the shtar through Kiyum Shtaros. So maybe we have a shtar, but we don't know how valid it is. We don't know how credible the information is. So that doesn't mean that the shtar gets ripped up. It doesn't mean the shtar is worthless. It means how can we use the shtar to remote the moment from somebody else? How can we use the shtar to establish a chiyuv if it has this questionable credibility? So then essentially it'll leave us in a situation of suffix. And if it's a suffix, so basically it means the shtar is not going to work. If the shtar is going to try to remote the moment from somebody else, but if it's not totally reliable, so then we don't know what's right, we don't know what's wrong, but it's not going to be able to be mostly moment, so it'll end up not having its desired effect. Okay, so we'll add in a few more details about that and then hopefully transition into, you know, the Mesa Matzma Rasha, hopefully tomorrow, but just to get to put everything in context and hopefully see the flow here, and I'll just quickly review what we said in the past few minutes, that essentially we saw like this. That to figure out what a shtar is first means we have to figure out what it isn't. We know that there's a psul of written edus. So how does the shtar escape that psul? So we saw three categories of answers. One is to say it doesn't, it's all drabanan, but otherwise it really is subject to this psul. That's the view of Rama. The other is to say that written edus is a narrow kind of psul, and it can be worked around. It doesn't actually exclude the shtar situation. So, for example, if you say it only applies to an eling, or it only applies to edus that is sent to Beis Din, or it only applies to edus that is remembered only through writing but not through your own memory, those are all ways of saying that they're in the same area, but the psul is narrow, and you can have a shtar without incurring that psul. The third way is to say, no, the psul doesn't apply because it's its own category, shtar l'chud and edus l'chud, and like Tosus and Ksubis and like the Baal Amor, there are ingredients to a shtar that are not there about edus, the most important being that it's midas in the sky. And Tosus adding a few other things as well, that it's a lashon of the shtar, and that it has to have two edim, etc. So if this does create a whole new entity, this Midas and Mishayit document. So what are some of those differences? So we saw the difference that it's subject only to the kashrus of the time, not kashrus of later, that it testifies to its own kashrus, that's a part of the existence of the shtar. It's Kiyum shtar is only being drabanan, and its own validity is Torah assumed. The idea that the shtar may make the person into a muhsak, that the Muhammadan explained based on the Shidim of Kabbat says, and therefore migo working as the shtar because it's considered to be migo lahotzi. And as Rashakti emphasized, that the shtar also tells you things beyond its existence, such as not only, for example, the case of the shtar about borrowing money, not only that you borrowed the money, but that it hasn't been paid back yet. So what the Gemara says that the Malbec can collect the money even if the Lova says, like, hey, and you can say, Shtar Chaviyadi Mavoi, well, why do I have your Shtar? So that sounds like a rove. So how does that work? Ain't Holtzalam and Acher a rove. So we saw that maybe what Sal was suggesting is a combination of some things. We have the rove plus the Chazaki Meikara, that we know the money was borrowed in the first place, we don't know what's paid back. Maybe also we'll throw in the Ruchan and say that he's considered like a Muchsak too, so it's a Muchsak versus a Muchsak. Or you could say that essentially this is an element of a shtar. One of the many magical powers a shtar has is that it also tells you about things beyond its words. And we saw the Rambam had this view that even an Eid Echad, a shtar, could force someone else into a shvua position, which you won't be able to take, so you collect money based on that. In the case of Mishnah and others ask, that's even more powerful than the two Eidim. You can't do that. If you're planning to pay back, they're not going to be able to contradict you. So then we saw the whole discussion that how do you understand that Rambam? The Rambam is basically saying that there's such a thing as a shtar, even with one witness. That was one day in Tosfos and Daf Chaf. And there's also a machlokus about whether a schaivas mitzav yodo, if the Baal Din just writes it on his own handwriting, is that considered to be a shtar or not? So, as the Rav suggested, that it's dependent on whether you see shtar as a form of edus, or whether it is its own kind of creation, a raya betoch mitzav. And we suggest that the Rambam is somewhat l'shitoso, that the Rambam, who says it could work with one aid, basically sees it as another track for Aedus, and that's why the Rambam thinks it's subject to the Sula may be along with Yitzhava. But if you believe that it's its own thing completely with its own rules, you have to have two aids, etc., so then you can understand why you're not bothered by the question of maybe along with Yitzhava, which is an Aedus distinction. And then we went from there, and then, okay, if the Shtar has this quality that it kind of transcends its material and it has its own inherent power to it, so now, how do we understand the impact of kiyum shtaras? When Chazal said that it has to be upheld, what were they doing? Were they saying that the existence of the shtar has to be established through kiyum shtaros? Or are we saying that the information in the shtar has to be supported through this kiyum? And that's what Chazal came and did. And then we noted the posters over here that asked, how come these Aedim have credibility if they're the ones saying it's us, but we were apostles, so why is that not called amigo? If it is amigo, like Rashi said, Pesha Asa, that's even credibility. So aren't they up against Aedim, i.e. themselves in this case? So we saw that Tosfos says, no, that once in any king Shtaros, so that's not really happening here, because in the same breath they're saying that it's no good. And then we discussed different approaches to what that means. What is Tosfos saying? Either maybe that they fail to uphold the Shtar, so now the shtar is not a shtar, as opposed to the second part of the Mishnah where others come to do it, and it is a shtar, and it's either aid them against the shtar or aid them against themselves in Kevishigachuvinachosnagi. Or another way to say it is that no, it's not about the shtar is still a good shtar, but it's about the content of the shtar, and they have now called the content into question. And what that means is that we don't really know one way or another, it's kind of a suffix, so we will leave it alone because of that. All right, so maybe we'll add a few more details about that tomorrow and take it from there. And, so we will stop the meeting for now, and we will pick up from then.